Kingway, Fox, Spear, Locke's action, very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendy's dog, Ransom is very harsh. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Beecher, Batliff, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's fat, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. Welcome to Trek Talking. It is Thursday night, October 5th. 2023. It is currently 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That means we are live and you can call in and chat with us. You can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking. My phone number here is 646-668-2433. We would love to hear from you. Before I go too far, I want to wish everybody a happy Spocktober and make sure you go and watch Cat's Paw, the only Halloween-themed Star Trek episode they made specifically for Halloween. So go and check that out if you haven't seen it. As of right now, guys, we have 167,990 followers on our Facebook page, which is absolutely incredibly awesome. And before I introduce you guys to my incredible Trekspert, I want to give you a little heads up as to what we're going to be talking about tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking about Lower Decks episode, Empathical, very short Treks episode, Holograms, All the Way Down. And of course we have our Star Trek birthdays, our fan shoutouts, and some Star Trek news. But before we dive right in, I want to go right around and introduce you to my incredible Trekspert. And we're going to start out in Las Vegas with Charles. How are you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing all right. We're enjoying a little bit of a repeat summer as the temperatures are going back up to about almost 90. Then next week we'll finally get back to the 80s.
Cool. And if you guys listened last week, my Vegas experts outnumbered my Portland experts, but everything is back in normal again. And we have our triple play, our trifecta, back together again in Portland. And we'll start off with the donut guy himself, who, yes, is enjoying a donut as we speak. David, how you doing, David?
Just looking at my donut. Pretty good.
Step away from the donut.
I'm doing pretty good. I've been, moving quite a bit over the week, so I'm now resting, and so glad that's over with. So, yeah.
And you're ready for some intense Trek talking.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent. And we also have from Portland as well, our very own Eric. How are you doing tonight, Eric?
Jim, I am doing fantastic and, feeling a real sense of camaraderie with our global audience here because I know that wherever you are, it is Romulan ale o'clock somewhere. So
that's very
cheers
very,
to Trek
very
friends.
True.
Cheers to Trek.
Very true. And with us again, back from a sabbatical, we have our very own Paul, and you're never gonna guess where he's from. That's right, Las Vegas. I don't know. If you said Portland, you're correct. How you doing tonight, Paul?
I think I heard somebody say Uranus, but that's not right.
That's
also from Portland.
Hang out.
Yeah. How you doing, man? I'm doing well. It's been a crazy busy couple of weeks. I can't even articulate it. And today, my alter ego is I'm a human pincushion. I received not one, not two, but three vaccines today to make sure I'm ready for the crazy winter that is coming. And so that I don't succumb to any crazy viruses or things. So I am armored up, baby, and fully prepped, ready for fun.
The Borg nanites are in action.
Exactly. You can track me anywhere.
All right, guys. Now that we've got that out of the way, you can go to our Facebook page, obviously, and at the top of the page, you'll see the Live Long and Prosper pinned there, asking you where you're listening from. All you got to do is drop us a line, make it like creative, and leave some emojis because that catches my eye. You're more likely to get mentioned. If you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, then you will be featured in a future fan shout out. So, Eric, who do we want to say thank you to this week?
Well, right at the top of the order here, we got top fan Ralph Verdonk, who's saying hello to us from Meerhout, Belgium, all the way from Belgium. We don't get a lot of folks from Belgium saying hello to us on the podcast. So, Ralph, thank you so much for being one of the leaders there in your country. And top fan status means that, of course, you interact with us a lot on our Facebook page, meaning you like a lot of things, maybe a repost, maybe a forward, maybe you leave a comment here and there. We always like to interact with our fans, and Ralph is one of those who we interact with quite a bit. So thank you so much for saying hello to us. Also saying hello this week to top fan David Rennie, who's saying hello to us from Fife, Scotland. Fife, Scotland, also David being a top fan, carrying that torch over there in the land of misty rain and mysterious things. Thank you, David, so much for the support that you give our podcast. Live long and prosper as well to Patricia Alamatos, who is saying hello to us from Santarém, Portugal. Portugal, one of those countries. Paul, have you been to Portugal? I can't remember.
No, I have not.
It's one of those countries I would love to go to, kind of hit the whole like Spain-Portugal peninsula there at some point in my life, I hope to. Patricia, it looks lovely there. I cannot wait to visit, and thank you so much for carrying our torch over there in your country. And last but not least on my list is Jeffrey Page. Jeffrey Page is saying hello to us from Chelmsford, Essex, just across the pond in the UK. Live long and prosper to you. Peace and long life right back at you, brother. Thank you so much for saying hello to us this week. Charles, I'm going to spin that globe back to you, and I think you're starting somewhere in the southeast, eh?
Well, let's start off with a welcome to Nathaniel Austin from Jacksonville, Florida. It's probably warm in Florida. Greetings to Addie May from North Central Alberta, Canada, as she hails a Canadian flag. Oh, welcome to Doc James from Maine. And a very warm greeting to Jerry Ferguson, John Key from Chicagoland. Oh, I've been watching some YouTube videos on Sensation. Would love to pass your Union Station sometime in Amtrak. David, who's on your list?
Yeah, so I got a lot of top fans over here. So I'm going to start off with thank you for top fan Deborah Aguirre Garcia, all the way from California with a Vulcan sign. The next top fan is going to be Brenda J. Thompson-Pellick from Toledo, Ohio. And next on the list is the top fan J. Marie Jukowski from Connecticut, USA with an American flag. Last on my list is the top fan Edward Russell from Pocono Mountain, Pennsylvania. Paul, who's on your list?
Well, first of all, my friends, we have the flag of Poland billowing in the wind proudly because we are saying hello to our good friend Adrian E. Gerard Linkiewicz in Warsaw, Poland. Absolute fantastic bastion of Europe there. Really great to hear from you, Adrian. Thanks for sharing your fandom and enthusiasm of all things Star Trek with us. It is great to hear from you. Not too far away from Poland, we're going to move on over to Sauerland, Germany, where Annette Ho is saying hello. Live long and prosper, Annette. And thanks for being a fan of Trek Talking and all of the things that we love about Star Trek. It's great to hear from you. Ooh, in warmer climes over there in, I believe, in Andalusia, if I'm not mistaken, right there on the old water. It's Malaga, Spain, where Damati Enriquez is hanging their hat. It is great to hear from you. Thank you for being a fan. And I would love to watch an episode of Star Trek in Spanish completely all the way through. I bet that it would just be a remarkable and incredibly cool experience. I wonder if YouTube can help me do that. I think that would be really, really great. So I just always love the fact that people are experiencing these stories in such a global fashion, from Asia to Europe to the American South, where they speak a whole different language. All the different ways people in their different areas and different languages experience Star Trek. It's just amazing. And finally, for me, I want to say a huge shout out, big hello to Alain Urdan in Lyon, France, a magical part of the world. I would just love to spend some time there right now. Elaine, put your head out the window and yell, they can hear you over in Geneva. You're not that far away from the Swiss border, Elaine. But the winter over there is unprecedented. I can't wait to see it with my own eyes. So hello, Star Trek fans from every corner of America to every corner of the globe. It's great that we all have this in common. Right, Uncle Jim?
Absolutely. And before we finish off our fan shout-out, Eric, Charles, you guys, didn't we have the Brazilian voice actor for Riker on the podcast? I think it was
we
Portugal.
We sure did.
Yeah.
He speaks Portuguese. Yeah. And I'm fiercely Googling, trying to find his name right now, but yeah, we absolutely had him on the podcast and he was so cool. And he actually delivered a couple of Riker lines in Portuguese on the podcast, which is like, you know, kind of like what you're talking about, Paul, like if you were watching it in somebody else's native language, what would it sound like? So we did get to hear the guy who plays Brazilian Riker. We had him on the podcast.
Yeah.
And those episodes are available on trektalking.com. And you can search for it.
That's right. You can go find it. And what was cool is he was so thrilled that we wanted to talk to him because he doesn't consider himself high.
What?
He was told because he's not really Riker.
Here it is, Jose Augusto. Jose Augusto, we had him on. Yeah, we had him on the podcast about a year ago. So, but it's there. Certainly.
Yeah, and he did Chakotay as well.
Oh, wait, he does.
He was awesome. He was a lot of fun. So you guys can go check that out. You can find that episode on trektalking.com. Just, you know, a little plug there. So anyways, because Paul was mentioning it, so I wanted to throw that out there. Check it out. He was awesome and a lot of fun. So continuing with our final fan shout-outs of the evening, I got to make this bigger because it's so small on my phone and I'm blind as a bat. I mean, we don't want to hear me trying to adjust my glasses. Anyways, we want to say happy birthday. Wait a minute. See? I'm senile. We're not on birthday.
Not yet.
No birthdays. We're doing fan shout-outs.
Beheadings are on Wednesdays.
Yeah,
keep it together,
Wednesdays. Jim. I'm long on
that. Matter of Sundays.
We're doing fan shout-outs right now. So I want to say thank you and kapla to a really awesome fan who's listening, who recently moved to West Monroe, Louisiana, but originally hails from Long Beach, California. We want to say thank you so much to Andrew Jimenez for being a fan of Trek Talking. Thank you so much, Andrew. We also want to say thank you to Jessica Mahadi from St. Louis, who flashes the Vulcan symbol, and top fan Megan Stover, who's listening to us from where, Eric?
From my home state of Oregon, yeah. Oregon, right here. She doesn't say where, but Oregon's a big state, so it could be anywhere. It could be Eastern Oregon, could be Southern Oregon, could be right here in Portland. We don't know. So, Megan, nice to have you here. I can feel your aura. You're around somewhere. Your energy is palpable.
It's the water. Got it. Or the donuts.
It is.
I'm
telling you,
know.
Man. There's a critical mass of awesomeness here. It's true.
Megan is a top fan, and that means she interacts with us a lot on our Facebook page. One of the best ways you can do that is I throw up these polls and I ask you to grade each episode on a scale of 1 to 10. So I bet you Megan takes place in our, definitely not least, how did I end up with this one? We want to say kapla and thank you to Pat Webb in New Zealand. That's not in the USA. I don't know how that happened. I must have been trying to put that on for Paul, and it ended up with me, but that's okay. We appreciate you listening, Pat. Thank you so much. And once again, if you guys would like to hear your name mentioned on a future fan shout-out, just head over to our Facebook page and drop us a little line. We'd love to hear from you. All right, Eric, as I said, we like to have a lot of involvement from our fans because our fans are very important to us. And every week, Friday, right around coffee break time, like around 9 o'clock, I'll post the question, what did you think about this week's episode of Star Trek, and ask you to score it. And we are a week behind because we have a lot of international listeners, and we want to have them enjoy the podcast spoiler-free. So we're talking about last week's episode today, and tomorrow I'll have a post about.
Well, top fan Philip Dino Marino said a 9.8 for Empathological Fallacies only because the episodes are not an hour long, and a 10 for its brilliant writing. I love all the references to classic Treks. Thanks, Philip. Claudia Baroni says a big 10 with a gold star. I just loved the Charlie's Angels reference. Somebody's going to have to pull that one out for me. I didn't catch that, but man, hopefully we can find that. That sounds really cool. Top fan Mike Lancaster said a 9. This week, I think, indeed an absolutely brilliant episode. But the Moopsie is still tops so far. Thanks, Mike. Top fan Paul Moses said a 7. The hilarity wore thin quickly, and so did Talin's crisis. Still, well done. Dustin S. Wing gave it a 7.5. Quite good. Better than most of the season so far. Great callbacks. Tim Mullins said 8.5. Those damn Vulcans messing things up that they not even trying to mess up. One of the Betazoids sounded like one of the ladies from Hot in Cleveland. Thanks, Tim. Jeffrey Jenkins gave it a 9.9. Paul J. Friday said 7.5. Fun. Top fan Alexander Miceli Roque gave it a 9. And Gail Stoltz said 8. Fun episode, though sometimes a little too cray for me. That gives us this week, guys, a fan score of 8.6. And that's pretty cool because that is second only to the fan score that was given to our season opener, Tuvix. So there you go. That got an 8.9. This got an 8.6. That's pretty good from the fans.
Not too shabby, if I do say so myself.
And you know what that music means. It's once again time to put on your thinking caps and join us for Star Trek Trivia Time with Uncle Jim.
All right. So, yeah, this is just something for fun that I just like to do and have some fun. So we're going to toss the first softball here over to David. You ready, David?
Woo-hoo!
All right, here we go. According to Trot, what are Starfleet carpets good for?
basically, just it's fun to pass out on.
That's right. That's fun to pass out on. So that's a nice little trivia question you can ask your friends the next time you're at a party. Why are Starfleet ships carpeted? So you can pass out easier. All right. This one, I'm going to toss this one over to Charles. What picture does Talen have hanging on the wall in her quarters?
I actually missed this one. I didn't see the picture on her wall. two guesses I would have of either Spock or Sarek.
You're kind of close. Eric, do you know the answer to this one?
I remember seeing it, and I was like, hey, that looks kind of familiar. Isn't it like a picture of, like, Vulcan's Forge Enterprise?
That's exactly what it is. It's the Vulcan Forge from Star Trek, the motion picture.
Oh, from motion
Spock,
picture. Okay.
Where he did his Kulinar. Yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's what it was.
And they showed it several times, and there it was right there. So, yep, that's what it was, the Vulcan Forge, Star Trek, the motion picture.
In my defense,
Eric,
also
you're
recalled in Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah. So, but that was a lot earlier. This was the one much later. So you're on a hot streak. You stole that one from Charles. Let's see how you can do on this one.
Okay.
In the ancient past, we're talking ancient past here, what relationship did the Cajuns and the Betazoids have?
Oh.
You're a Dr. Tahana fan, so that's why this one at you.
That was such a funny part of this episode. So, yeah, apparently in the ancient past, the Cajuns actually hunted the Betazoids for food.
I feel
like I need to know a little bit more about that. But actually, it's not surprising in some ways, because there's actually some cool sort of beta canon out there about how the Cajuns are actually a sort of break-off faction of the Kzinti from the animated series, so that they actually are related as cat people, and that they were like the more peaceful Kzinti who were like, screw you guys in your warlike society, we're going to get out of here. So, you know, maybe early Cajuns, when they were still breaking off, they passed by Beta Zed, and they were like, tasty.
And because I saw, don't forget that the episode of TNG, Transfigurations, Deanna Troi was turning into a fish.
So there you go. So cat eat fish. Yeah. You're right.
So maybe made that connection. This is future. They were fish people. Like,
oh man, now I want some tuna.
Oh boy.
Oh man.
All right. So I'm going to toss this softball to Paul. He's positioned. He's ready to catch this easy one. So Paul.
Sorry, man. I have Bendai syndrome, so I'm not sure if I'll be able to answer this correctly, but I'll try. I may just start screaming for no reason.
So, who wore the hat that said, it's Romulan ale o'clock somewhere, and where did she get it?
All right. I know at least half of this one, because it's a very memorable character name of the three Betazoid ladies who have, been wreaking havoc. It's the perhaps, let's say, more overtly suggestive of the three, with the wonderful name of Cat Rod.
Yes, that's right.
Which means maybe she should get a job in sick bay on the Cerritos, possibly. Ambassador Cat Rod, I don't know what you mean. I don't know where she got it. Angel One? I'm going to say Angel One.
Angel One, that's right. She picked it up on Angel One.
Oh, man, I can't believe I got
that. They're softballs. I'm just lobbing them out there.
After the week I've had, man, I'm lucky I can remember what show it even is. I'm like,
all right. So, David, you ready?
Yeah.
I figured after your favorite line from the last one was Hump Dungeon, I figured this was a perfect place to do it.
Wow.
So David, who said, hey, is it just me or is it incredibly horny in here?
I want to say it from the exact same episode of last week.
It was Mitch McConnell. Yeah. It was Mitch McConnell.
Oh, man.
It was Mitch McConnell.
I cannot.
There's incredibly horror in here.
Well, I mean, I think there's only like one person who would say that. That's my guess. I don't know, but
it sounds like a Mariner line, but it's not Mariner. I want to say it was one of the Betazoid, but I cannot remember her name. Although it was the one wearing the blue dress, I want to say.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. I will give that to you.
Awesome.
Her name is Kafu.
Okay.
That sounds like a ransom line to me.
Yeah. You know, when I watch the episode, I try to get trivia questions that I think the particular of you right away when I heard that one. So keeping with that basic line of thought, Charles, you ready for yours?
Yep.
All right. So who said, can you imagine anything more Vulcan than Bendai syndrome? Hell, Mr. Spock's dad had it, and he's as Vulcan a motherfucker as anyone. And of course, they bleeped it on the show, but we can say it here on the air.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I believe that might have been Lieutenant Junior Grade Merritt Becker.
Exactly. And I never laughed so hard. I was like,
oh my
wow,
gosh.
I love that whole scene where they're locked in the closet and she Vulcaned it all up. I loved it.
Natana's like, perhaps I am Vulcan as a...
Yes.
Yeah.
That was great. All right, Eric, you ready for another one?
Yeah, man, I'm ready.
All right. What disease did Dr. Tahana scan the Betazoids for?
Ooh, I get another Cation question. It is, well, not really a Cation question. It's the one, it's not Bendai syndrome because that's the, oh, yeah, it is. Is it, wait, hold on. What disease did Ta'ana scan the Betazoids? Oh, right, the Betazoids are the ones who get the Xanthi fever.
That's right. Xanthi fever is correct. And Paul, you got another one. You ready?
Hold on, let me slap myself across
okay.
the face. Yes. Okay, right.
Here we go. What agency do the three Betazoids that board the Cerritos secretly work for?
Oh, it's excellent you would ask me this question because I just, among my many interests is various intelligence agencies throughout the cosmos of something I'm just a personal vested interest in, let's just say. And one of the ones that I just happen to know a little bit about is the infamous BIA, or the Beta Z Intelligence Agency, that operated out of, shockingly, Beta Z during the 24th century. And it's the BIA that these agents were really working for.
That's the one that Mitch McConnell wants to defund. So I just throw that out.
Take away all our funding.
All right, Charles. And this one, I thought of you right away. Right away, you popped in.
Thanks.
And this is just a fun one. It's not a particular person, but because I couldn't find the character's name. So anyways, this is your question. Who said that, of course, for Sector 87 will lurk over there?
You're giving me Romulan questions?
I could use
that Romulan ale. Yeah, I think that was the captain of the Romulan ship who was on the other side of the neutral zone.
I read the credits. I looked it up. I couldn't find it was an uncredited character, so... Yes, it was the captain. Trivia with Uncle Jim this week. And now it's time for Cadet Training with Charles.
All right. As Jim took some of my thunder talking about some of the different links in here, we're going all over the place today. Let's start off with TNG, Haven, Season 1, Episode 11. That's our first visit with Luoxana Troi, the one that we believe the three ladies were kind of molded after. In Lower Decks, Wedge Douge, Season 2, Episode 9. That's our first appearance of T'Lyn. Since this is a T'Lyn episode. Enterprise, Kenbo, Season 1, Episode 1 and 2. I thought this was an interesting thought. We're comparing T'Pol to T'Lyn. Neither are members of the organization. Both choose to stay on their respective ship. I thought an interesting comparison with those two.
Uh-huh.
TNG, Captain's Holiday, Season 3, Episode 19. Our first mention of Ryza. DS9, Fascination, Season 10. We learn about Xanthi Fever. Of course, TNG, Sarek, Season 3, Episode 23, is, of course, when we learn about Bendai Syndrome. This was an interesting one that I didn't think about. But in the episode, when they pull out the box, that here are your two choices. And one of the two choices was a puzzle of Reed and the NX-01 Enterprise. Well, why? Enterprise, Lieutenant Malcolm Reed. Reed was the first security officer of the future Federation. In fact, I heard the quote on there, he mentioned, a Reed alert, a.k.a. Red alert. I didn't think about that when I saw the episode, but I looked up teasers like, oh, that's an interesting one.
He's a fantastic character, Charles. He just Reed is one of my favorites. He has such a cool arc over the course of those four seasons. And he's kind of he's an interesting guy, and they give you just a little bit of his backstory during the show too. He's just one of my favorite. I love that moment, seeing the Reed puzzle. And
that's exactly why that moment was there. It's like, okay, that is a nice moment there. There were a couple of minor references to the game and Abu Jitsu.
Oh, yeah, I saw that Abu Jitsu guy in the background. That was funny.
one of the characters was wearing a game glasses.
Oh, yeah.
You know the glasses that go into the guy? Somebody was actually wearing that in one of the scenes. So it sounds like with a lot of details in there, maybe we ought to talk about this episode.
And wasn't Malcolm Reed, as far as Star Trek lore goes, the first member of Section 31?
Yeah, well, he's the first one that we see kind of recruited, because he's actually recruited by somebody else. So,
yeah. Right. As far as we're concerned,
canonically, he's the first person that we see recruited into the organization. Yep.
Yeah, as far as we know, right? Because Enterprise happens prior to everything else. All right, guys. We've played some trivia, we've had some fun, and we've got some references, and now we're going to talk about the episode, and we're going to give our scores. Now, the fans scored it 8.3, so let's see what
8.6.
We have to do. 8.6, wow, okay. And since Paul wasn't with us last week, we're going to start with Paul. So what do you think, Paul?
I thought this was fun. I have to say that I enjoyed the regular characters of the crew way more than the guest Betazoids, who got a little, you know, I think they wore out their welcome for me fairly quickly. But I love watching members of the crew just completely losing their minds. You know, it's like if it were even possible, Mariner gets even louder and more party girl persona, right, when she's in her, you know, heightened emotional state. And Rutherford is just like, he just, you know, had that, you know, MDMA, right? He's just, I love everything and everyone. And Tendi's even more friendly than possible, right? And, you know, it's just, they're just completely unhinged, which is a lot of fun. I like it whenever we have Dr. Ta'ana. I want more of Dr. Ta'ana in every episode, frankly. I think she's just hysterical, and just the whole, you know, latent predator of her in this episode was just great. I thought that was just really fun. So it was cute. I thought it was really good. You know, Vulcan is a motherfucker. That stuck with me. I don't know that everything else stuck with me, though. I thought it was really fun. I'm wanting to know a little bit more about the whole, you know, ongoing arc of this whole mystery ship that they're, you know, referring to, and what's going on with that, right? What's really the deal? I think we need to know a little bit more about how that fits into the plot, just to open up the plot so there is more plot, because we're just getting the same reference over and over to that, but we're not diving in any deeper yet. And I think it's time to dive in a little bit deeper, right? It really is, this is the Talyn season, right? I mean, this really seems like it's, she's becoming as much of a main character as any of the others are. And I feel like she's almost like taken some of Boimler's screen time. I mean, does anyone else feel that way?
Yeah, I think she has. Absolutely. And I don't know that I'm against it, but yeah, she absolutely has.
I mean, she's funny as hell. I mean, that's the thing, is don't take it as a complaint by all means, because I think she's great and the character is just, you know, deadpan hilarious, right? I really enjoy that character. I think it's just interesting, you know, because you kind of feel like they've got their dynamic going on this show, and then here's a whole new main character, right? And but they're doing some fun things with her to kind of look at how Vulcans are perceived, and she's sort of getting to have little, you know, learning moments each week, and you know, she's kind of on a similar journey to understand herself that we've seen a lot of other characters in past Treks be on, like, you know, like Spock's been on and Data's been on. So she's kind of on her own voyage of self-discovery and acceptance within a social group, which is totally new to her. So I'm finding her really interesting as a character. I always want more of Carol Freeman because she is just hilarious. I think for me, it's just really enjoyed the you know, watching everyone kind of lose control of the main characters, and including more of Talyn, which is just great. She's fitting in great, and perfectly happy for more of her. But the guest characters, not so much. You know, it's just like a lot of unnecessary fighting and kicking and nonsense. So I just so what would I give this episode? I think I would probably give it. I think I would probably give it an 8, I think. It seems like it's appropriate. Yeah, let's give it an 8, if we will, and let's hope we keep moving forward with the story and becoming a little bit more interesting, and let's get a Tendi episode, or not Tendi, let's get a Dr. Ta'ana episode going. That's really what I think at some point, how have we never really had that? I think it's a void that needs to be filled.
Yeah, the most Ta'ana that we've kind of gotten is by way of Shax, I think. But we haven't gotten a real focus on her.
So maybe we need to have an episode with the two of them, like, go AWOL or something.
Yeah.
Well, they had that hologram episode, so I guess that was both of them together.
Yeah. But I would love them to dig a little deeper and have even get more surreal with that character, because it's just she can't not be funny on... So I would welcome more of that. So yeah, I think I can go with an 8. Sounds appropriate. But yeah, I'm just curious to see where this season as a whole is going.
You want to add a decimal into that?
No, that's not my jam, baby. I'm pretty easy to make decisions, right? It's like when you ever drive a stick shift, David? You ever drive one of those?
I tried.
Yeah, well, I think stick shift is cool. And if I ever had to have another stick shift again, I'd be down with it, right? Because you got first gear, second gear, third gear, fourth gear, fifth gear. Ain't no 2.5 gear. Ain't no 3.5 gear. Ain't no 4.5 gear. If you miss your gear, you strip your clutch. And I just think it's great. So, you know, I like those definitive convictions. That's just, you know, that's what fuels me. So let's give it a solid 8.00.
All right. There you have it. And since David got to talk to us using the time-traveling DeLorean last week, we're going to let David jump in here and share his live interpretation of this episode. Take it away, David.
Okay, let me play the tape that I recorded yesterday. No, just kidding. Okay, so let's see. So yeah, this episode, I don't know. I'm having mixed feelings with it for some reason. It wasn't my favorite, but I don't know. I watched it the second time. Even the second time, it was just like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I had to rewind a couple times when I watched it, but because they talk so fast, I'm like, okay, what did he say? But yeah, I mean, it was just. It was a lot of catching up to do. It felt like work almost to me for some reason. So to me, it was just kind of like I didn't really get time to enjoy it as much as I thought I would. But I think out of all of this, my actual favorite part of the episode was when it almost crossed the Romulan neutral zone, and then the warbird decloaked, and then all the crew goes, "Aw." So that was pretty good. This episode, it felt, I was suspecting it was the Betazoids that were causing all of this and everything like that, and I completely forgot about how Vulcan could also do the exact same thing. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Spock also do something similar, or was it another Vulcan or something?
No. That was Sarek.
From Enterprise?
Yeah, I mean,
brought up the episode Sarek.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah.
Charles, there is something worth mentioning, I think, about Spock, which I think proves something about, you know, some people have been talking about, like, the range of influence and, like, how powerful T'Lyn's thing was. Remember that in the original series, I don't remember which episode it was, but I remember Spock was able to kind of, like, influence a guard through a wall, right? He was a Vulcan who didn't have to touch somebody to have like a mental influence on them. So it seems to me that Vulcans like not only have that mind meld situation, but they absolutely kind of, you know, radiate mental waves or whatever that affect other people. And they can do it intentionally if they want to.
Interesting. So yeah, I mean, I completely forgot about how Vulcans could do that, but yeah. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, this was a T'Lyn episode, and it was interesting, but it wasn't as interesting as I was hoping. So I'm not going to be given a 10 for this one. I'm actually going to be giving this one, kind of close to where Paul is, I think. And, unless someone can convince me otherwise, I might raise it or lower it, which is, but, other than that, there's not much of this episode that I can really remember, and I've seen it at least good two or three times already past week, and I don't know, it just didn't stick with me. So I'm going to go with an 8.3, I think.
We got an 8.3. All right, that's pretty cool. That's still very reasonable. How about you, Charles? What do you think?
Well, it was definitely an interesting episode. Okay, here's an interesting little thing that was popped up in there. How old is T'Lyn?
62.
Interesting irony. We go back over to Enterprise. And how old is T'Pol?
Is she 62?
Is also 62.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it.
I thought
that's a
very
catch,
interesting. And I think thanks to help some of the Easter eggs, when they were comparing those two Vulcans together, and it's like, and they talked about the ages of some of the different Vulcans we've had in the series, and that both of them were 62. It's like, oh, that's interesting. But I like that comparison without really direct referencing, but we get those two very, very similar. Because in Broken Bow, T'Pol decides she was going to return back to command. It's like, no, I think I'm going to stay with the Enterprise. And La'in's doing the same thing. She's wanting to stay with the ship and get a little more understanding of the crew. I love the references to Zandai thief and Bendai syndrome. And, of course, Jim already talked about one of my notes, which is the BIA. Didn't realize I had an agency on Betazoid, but I guess they did. I think the story, as Paul's saying, he's worrying about the story progressing. I think the story is progressing. It's just they want to get it through the whole season. I don't think we're going to find out the entire story till episode 10. They're going to wait on the finale to finish it. But I've had some series that have done that. Even Discovery did that a couple of times where they, you wait to the end till you know, realize who the Red Angel is. What was the cause of the burn? They gave you plenty of hints as they get there. Can't take as many notes as time, but just a good episode. I like what they're doing with it. The three Betazoids didn't really catch my eye as much as I liked the crew issues in dealing with the different how the crew members interact. And we get the party scene. And I'm going to throw this one in because this was part of our chat during the week. But we actually finally show a crew member wearing a habib.
Hijab.
Know the pronunciation right.
Hijab.
Hijab.
Yep.
Hijab. Okay. And to finally getting that reference from a fan a couple years ago, I like that being put in there. Make reference to the fans too. Okay, we're looking out and mention the fans too. Let's bring her in.
Yeah, Charles, just to give some background to the listeners in case they didn't see that. So a year or two ago, there was an internet thing that went around where a woman was cosplaying Jordi LaForge, but she did it. She's Muslim, and she did it with her hijab on, and people kind of freaked out about it on the internet. And so that's what Charles is referencing.
But
because people are 12.
Well, myriad reasons, I guess, which we shall not get into now.
Oh, my God.
I know.
But it was her choice to wear it, and I respect saying, hey, we've got a crew member who's going to respect their religion and their choice. So I thought that was a good addition in there, that they're looking not only to looking at the Star Trek episodes, but they're taking a look at fandom too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. This week, I'll put in my average scores of an 8.5.
Wow, we're pretty consistent. Pretty consistent. Well, Eric, you want to jump in here next?
Sure. Yeah, I dug this episode. One of the things that I think Lower Decks has done particularly well is that they have taken a moment to sort of dig into each character over the course of their run here. Like we got some Rutherford time before. We've definitely had some Mariner and her mom issues and kind of her whole jam. We got some Tendi time. The fact that they brought kind of Talyn on as this extra character and that they're digging into her a little bit, I'm pretty cool with that. And actually, this episode to me felt almost like part two of the Wage Douge episode, because, you know, Talyn's been around, but she's kind of been like the straight man comedic relief over the last two or three episodes. And she definitely, while it has felt like a Talyn heavy season, I think because she's been more involved, this was the first one where they really like kind of dug into her thing. So I thought that was hilarious. I totally missed that she was the same age as T'Pol, but I absolutely got the similarities in reference to her and T'Pol. And in fact, the similarity was so much that when I was describing this episode to somebody, I accidentally said T'Pol instead of Talyn as I was talking about this character. So for whatever that's worth. We had an A, B, and a C story in this one, which we've kind of poked around a little bit. Talyn's being the A story. We got the B story, which to me was Captain Freeman and the trifecta of Betazoid ladies. And here's what I'll say about them. Okay, so I didn't personally find like the uninhibited, you know, party scenes hilarious too much or anything. I mean, they felt very reminiscent of episodes like The Naked Time and Naked Now, where, you know, crew just sort of goes nuts because some weird stuff is happening on the ship. So it just felt a little okay, I see where this is going, you know, I kind of see the formula here. So the first third or so of the episode was a little dull to me, but then it really took off, and I think it's not only because of the Talyn story, but I think it's because Freeman gets involved more with the Betazoid ladies, and to me, to have these sort of like four, 40-plus-year-old women on the screen at the same time kind of interacting with one another, and Freeman being the voice of reason and the other three being hilariously out of control, I just really enjoyed that. So I dug the B story quite a bit in this episode as well. The C story with Boimler and the security guys and stuff, it was cute. To me, it didn't really add too much to the, you know, to the interest stack, so to speak. I will say that Boimler has a tendency to kind of make assumptions in this show, as do, I guess, a lot of the characters, particularly Mariner and Boimler. It seems like in this show, they tend to make assumptions, and a lot of episodes are kind of based on them, their assumptions being disproven. So this was just another one of those where Boimler is sort of like, oh, you know, security is kind of weak, and they do slam poetry and stuff, which, by the way, was hilarious because I immediately, as soon as I said slam poetry, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Wasn't Worf doing some poetry back in the day? So to me, that harkened way back to, like, Worf's poetry stuff. But then, of course, when security kicks into gear, you know, he's impressed. When that whole scene is going down and they grab the guns and they go out into the ship to kind of, you know, pacify or whatever they're going to do, I love it when you get T'Ana totally freaking out and you get Shax in the corridor and she jumps at him to like claw his face off and he just catches her by the neck like a cat, right? Just like holding
her out. I love
that
too.
It was so funny. She's like, rah, rah, rah. And you could just hear him thinking, it's okay, honey. It's okay. So I love Shax and T'Ana together, honestly. I'm with you, Paul. I want more T'Ana, man. I want more Shax too. Like, I just, his favorite thing being ejecting the warp core. I just love that kind of energy, that like reckless, oh my God, this is what I'm going to live life to my fullest. T'Ana just kind of always feels like she's a little bit unhinged, which is hilarious for somebody in the medical profession. I dug the episode overall. I'll say the Talyn stuff I really especially dug. It's not like a 10 or anything like that for me, but I'm gonna go like a solid 8. I feel like if the first third had been better, I could have bumped it up to a 9. I'll stick with an 8 right now.
Can I add something to that, Eric?
Sure.
You mentioned back when we were talking about the fan score, and you mentioned somebody for Claudia who said something about a reference for the Charlie Angels. Does anybody know what she's talking about?
Oh, yeah. Did anybody else catch that?
I think it's just because you had three women running around being like detectives.
I wondered if there was like a pose moment or something that I missed.
Maybe there was, but I don't think it was some big heavy hitting moment. I mean, it wasn't very memorable if it was, at least not for me, but then I was never much of a Charlie's Angels fan. So
there was
there
was also kind of a fun thing about how people run on this show online. I don't know if you guys saw that, but they were talking about the styles that people run in, and like Talyn is a total, you know, she runs like you would imagine a Borg running, or like, you know, she's stiff arms like the Terminator, you know, just like stiff arms, total like wheels run. But Kayshan? No. What's the guy's name? The Marian's name?
I think it's Kayshan.
Is it Kayshan? He runs like this Japanese animated character, this anime character called Naruto, where he puts his arms like straight back and he puts his face forward as he runs, which is just hilarious because we've never seen Kayshan like life outside of Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. So to me, we get little clues in Lower Decks to all of the idiosyncrasies of all of these kind of ancillary races that are included on the ship, which I think is kind of fun. You know, I would love it if like some future live action show had a Tamarian and referenced them running that way, or, you know, came up with a reason that they do that, or so. Star Trek is really weaving new and complex plots that kind of are getting more and more interesting. And to me, having now an animated show that can serve as future canon fodder, so to speak, is amazing, right? It's just amazing.
All right.
Well, that leads me to wrap it up with the caboose, which I'm more than happy to do. First of all, the very, very beginning, when the Betazoids come on, Cthu goes and grabs Ransom by the butt, and he says, "Oh, I get off at 0300. She's, "You're too easy." And he says, "I can be vague and unavailable." I was just laughing so hard because that's so Ransom. I just, like, wow, okay. And I love what you guys said about Talyn. I think she's like the Spock character, like in Star Trek IV, where she's funny because they're playing it the way they're playing it. She's just being a Vulcan, and it's just funny. It's just, she's a great character, and it just comes off as funny. So I really love what they're doing with Talyn. I love that she's the straight character, and I love how she tells a joke by not telling a joke. Like at the end when Mariner goes up about it, you know, and she says, "Was I getting emotional?" and kind of turns it back on Mariner. I thought that was funny. I also like Miglamu, how he's beating the crap out of the replicator through the whole episode, you know, phasers it, beats it up, and then at the end just kind of walks away whistling like, "That wasn't me. Someone else did that."
Yeah, so what they've
done
with that, Jim, is they've taken the psychologist on the ship and they've made him the one with the most issues, which, of course, for anybody in therapy is hilarious, right? You can imagine.
It was good. And I got to say, last week I made a comment about where in the hell is Jennifer? They've written her off the show completely, which is unfortunate, but they replaced her with Talyn. But guess what? Jennifer was on the ship. We saw her in the background of all the scenes in the bar. So Jennifer is still there. She doesn't have any speaking roles. And I guess she broke up with Mariner, I guess. I don't know. But she's still there, which is really cool. So that's a plus for me. I love the Romulans at the end. Well, let's go lurk over in Section 87. I thought that was a riot. And I enjoyed the episode. I laughed when Mariner's locked in the closet with Talyn. And have you guys noticed on Lower Decks they bleep out all the swearing, and they swear a lot on Lower Decks
lately?
Yeah.
And, but on Discovery and Picard they will swear, but on Lower Decks they won't. And I read a whole article about it, and I think that bleeping it makes it funnier. I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Like when Tahana's going off, bleepity, bleep, 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 it's like you don't need to hear it to know what she's saying, and it's funny as hell. And when Mariner is in there saying, well, Spock's dad had it, and he's just bulking as a motherfucker, and then Talyn says the same thing, I cracked up laughing. I never laughed so hard. I was like, I can just imagine Spock saying that to Kirk, you know? But, yeah. I enjoyed the episode. I really did. And like I said last week, Star Trek doesn't always have to be serious. It can be fun. And they can make fun of themselves and still be enjoyable. And this episode was right there. I really enjoyed it. And I like how they, like Paul said, they tied it right back in to the ship that's destroying other ships. So we're going to get to that. Episode 6 is on tonight. We'll talk about that next week. So we only have 4 episodes left to wrap that up. So I think, like Paul said, I think we're going to start seeing that nameless ship come more into the storyline. I didn't enjoy it, but, you know, Boimler with the security guy. And I did like, you know, how they're like, well, we don't just run around phasering people, you know. And I thought that, you know, that was a fun thing, especially. Who was the character that was reading the Worf slam poetry? Couldn't catch her name.
I didn't catch her name either. But the fact that they were doing that, they were doing that, Jim, to take care of Boimler, right? That was, like, the whole reason that they were doing it, which is hilarious because that fits into that whole, like, Shax family baby bear sort of, like, Shax is the mama bear, and he feels his security team are his babies that he has to keep track of, that he has to protect, that he cares deeply for, I think. And I always love characters who are super, super grumpy who care deeply for people.
And that's
just,
him.
Like, resonates with me.
And when he says, oh, I think the warm milk that we gave her will calm her down.
He knows his gal.
He knows her well. And that character that was reading the slam poetry, they said her name. I should have written it down. I don't remember it. But the Betazoids were reading people's minds, and that's how they were kicking ass because they knew what they were going to do. And she goes up there, and she's just standing there thinking about her slam poetry and just stepping out of the way so the Betazoid can't read her mind because she's doing slam poetry. And I just thought, wow, that's hilarious because she's using kind of like reverse psychology on the Betazoid. So I enjoyed that too. So overall, I'm going to give this one, in honor of Paul, I'm going to give it a 9.5. So how close do we come to our fans, Charles?
Well, this is actually interesting. The fans beat us this time, because the fans gave us an 8.6, we gave an 8.6.
A what?
You cut out there, Charles. An 8.
What? 8.46.
So that's almost an 8.5. So we're like a tenth lower. So that's
yeah, I call it an 8.5.
Yeah, that's right. That's pretty spot on.
Not too shabby. Not too shabby at all. So, guys, there was a very short trek that dropped last Wednesday, and it was written by a friend of the show, Aaron Walke, who is the head writer on Star Trek Prodigy. And I got to tell you guys that after I saw this short trek and I saw the Prodigy character show up, I immediately messaged him, and I said, Aaron, the fact that Prodigy is back in Star Trek again, can I read anything into that? And he gave me a very cryptic answer. And I got to tell you, cryptic is better than just no. Cryptic is always good. Cryptic means something is brewing somewhere. I can't tell you about it.
It means
because,
hope. It means hope.
Yeah, that means hope. So that's a good thing. So very short treks, holograms all the way down. Aired last Wednesday, and we're gonna listen to it right now. It's only 2 minutes long. It's an extremely very super short track actually, and here it is for you guys that didn't get a chance to watch it.
Treaty signed and Earth safe. It's been a long road, but I think it'll be smooth sailing from here on out.
Computer freeze program. You were right, Deanna. These historical holo programs are exactly what I needed to relax and clear my head. Think I'm finally ready to talk with Captain Picard.
Computer freeze program. See? A perfect fake. If you want to win a war, you'll need some convincing propaganda. For the right price, of course. I'll even throw in a keychain and half off root beer floaties.
Computer, freeze program. That's how we got the Romulans into the Dominion War? Man, this is way cooler than Boimler's Kirk Gorn friends with something more fanfiction sims I found in his personal file.
Computer, freeze program. Honestly, I thought this would be educational. But there's very little to learn from here, I'm afraid.
Computer, pause wrestling. By the great bird of the galaxy, I've had enough of this nonsense. I swear it's a practical joker all over again.
Computer, freeze program.
Computer, end simulation.
Computer, pause hollow novel. Oh, that's enough silly stories for one night.
Good night, computer.
Computer, end playback. What the heck? Are we real or part of the hologram?
Something is not right. Computer, freeze program.
You are the computer. Who are you talking to?
All right, Eric, what did our Facebook fans think about this episode of Very Short Trek?
Well, top fan Sarita Taub said a 9, a true mashup to be sure. Michael Wilson said a 10 out of 10. Just like everything else Aaron Waltke has written, the man does not miss. Ooh, hashtag save Star Trek Prodigy. Thanks, Michael. Jason Harden gave it a 10 out of 10. Peter Makovites gave it a 5. Nicole Eschler gave it a 10. This one was awesome. Features a lot of Trek people and even had Lower Decks and Prodigy. We'll be curious to see what the last one will be like. Top fan Jim Pence said 8. They seem to be getting better. This was a good one and much better than the last one. Scott Vila said a 7. It wasn't funny, but it was actually more enjoyable than the juvenile ones. Top fan John Stanton said 9, funniest one yet. The first one was time deaf. The second was better, but overly reliant on potty humor. The third is easily the best. Hopefully this trend will continue. Troy R. Stuhl gave it an 8. This one was a lot of fun. And top fan Liam Astle said a 7. At least it was better than the last one. There's a theme. That guy gives us a fan score for this very short track of 8.3, and I feel like that's very respectable. Is that our best score so far? It feels like that's right up there.
Yeah,
that's much higher.
Yeah.
The very short tracks have been bad.
That last week was like the only track that we've ever rated that was in that 2 range.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever gotten that low, but you know, it's all part of that grand conspiracy that we're part of.
Yep.
All right. So let's see. David, you want to get us started on this one?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. Well, it was very short. I'm done. This one I barely remembered because when you mentioned that you watched a short trek, I thought you meant last Wednesday. I didn't realize it was last Wednesday. So this one I had to quickly get on YouTube while you were playing it and kind of watch it along. So this one was okay. I did like the theme where it was just like constantly going from one franchise to the one series to the next, and it was interesting. But I someone correct me. Did TOS even have holodecks?
They had a rec room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which they referenced.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. To me, it was okay. Wasn't the best one. I mean, next week, of course, is definitely my favorite. But this one in particular, it was better. Definitely way better than the other one. Let's just put it that way. But but yeah, this one was very short. I'm gonna give it a very, 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 very short, let's say.
Very long time to say.
I'm going to give this one about a
6.8. All right.
6.8.
Well, I got to tell you.
Pulse just like there's steam coming out of
as opposed to a 6.7 or a 6.9, because it's subtle degrees of variation between
those
decimals.
It is, man.
Right?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very.
Some people.
It's
like
technical.
People who can tell the difference between a Merlot and a cab just by tasting it, right? It's like.
It's complicated.
I disagree.
it's very complicated.
Thank you for playing, but no, you're wrong.
But, you know, I got to say that seeing NX-01 again was a lot of fun. And seeing Trip and having him voiced by the actor was great. And when he says the line, "It's been a long road," I lost it. I'm like, wow, there you go. You know, and then leading into Deanna Troi and Riker in what arguably is the worst season finale of any Star Trek series ever made, and they referenced it in this episode. And then, of course, it's a fake from Deep Space Nine. They squeezed in some Tendi. They got in some Sulu, voiced by George himself. They got in some Prodigy, which really got me going. I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it could have been longer, because it felt too short. But boy, oh boy, was it better than the crap that we've had to endure. I got to tell you, Aaron Waelke knows his Star Trek and he knows his references, and he crammed a lot into 2 minutes. He really did. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think I'm going to go a little bit higher than David did. I'm not going to go with a 6.8. I'm not even going to go with a 6.9. I think I'm going to go with an
It's not that 8.4. Short for me.
All right. So who wants to jump in here next? Charles, you want to jump in next?
All right. I think there's not a whole lot to add to it. I like the references. I thought the Prodigy characters looked a little flat.
I think that's because, Charles, if you look, they don't even move. They were like cutouts of figures from the show, and they're not even animated at all. They're just kind of like there.
Yeah.
That's why they felt flat, because they were.
Yes, they were. They were clip art.
Which I wish they'd done just a little bit more with that. But that, I think I'll go with an 8.5. It was good, but I just wish they'd done a little bit more with character with the project group and made just a little longer.
All right. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I'm on board with you guys. I dug this one overall. I liked the inception nature of it, right, where you kept kind of like zooming out, zooming out, zooming out, zooming out, and you never knew when you were going to finally get to reality. So that feels like it actually almost has a story in it, you know, in 2 minutes, which I think is really cool. I love that it ends with Neelix in bed. That just, you know, I love Neelix as a character, as everybody knows, and so to have him in there was really cool. I'm with you, Jim, seeing the NX-01 at the beginning. I kind of freaked out a little bit. I thought it was going to be a whole bunch more NX-01, but for that moment, you know, you got to see Travis Mayweather at the helm, and you got to see Reed in the background, and you got to see Trip talking, so I dug that. Yeah, all the references really cool. Can't really add too much more to that. So I loved this short trek. Definitely my favorite one. I'm going to give it an 8. I thought it was pretty good. Yeah.
All right, Paul, that leaves you to bring up the caboose, buddy.
All right, Holmes, will do. I enjoyed this, right? I mean, Waldy's great, and he's very clever, and he put a good package together here. To me, this felt like a Matryoshka, right? The Russian nesting dolls. Right, where you take one apart and oh, there's another, and then you take another one apart, oh, there's another one, and so that kind of, you know, reveal within reveal within reveal, like those little nesting dolls that we have there. I enjoyed it. It was more of a premise than a story, really. You know, as far as it goes, it was just more like the series of reveals, but no real through line of a story as such, right? But huge points for me, because Aaron wasn't tempted to go down the scatological road that so many of these other short treks have done in just such grotesque and infantile ways. And previous weeks, especially Worst Contact episode 3, which if I never see again, it'll never be too soon. that was just a complete horror show. But I don't really feel it had much of an ending. It just sort of ended and stopped. I don't really feel that the Neelix thing was an ending as such, because it just seemed kind of like, and we're done. And so, you know, I would have liked to, I tend to be, you know, like a little bit more of a full narrative, even if it's a short thing, but just, you know, a through line to follow. But I thought that it was just the cleverness of the idea and the fact that it, unlike some of these, the main thing you get here is affection for the material, right? And to me, that carries a lot of weight, you know, as opposed to, like, you know, the one this week. Yeah, we'll get to that next week. But it's like the folks making these sometimes don't seem like they're really genuinely fond of what it is they're depicting. They seem like they're kind of, you know, more having a, they're not laughing with it. They're laughing at it, which I don't really dig. And Aaron
well,
doesn't
I mean,
do
I think,
that.
Yeah, and you got to, like, ask yourself, what is the, like, what do you think, Paul, is the actual purpose of the very short tracks? Like, why did they even make them?
I think the purpose was so that they could laugh at how clever they were in the hipster bar on La Brea.
Okay.
That's what I think it was, right? But, and, you know, hey, we got paid to write these things. What should we do? I don't know. Order some more Cosmopolitans. Let's talk about it. I don't think there's a lot much more going on beyond that, really. I just, these seem like they're way too, you know, cleverer than thou, or at least they think they are. And it definitely, I think they're a little out of touch with the audience for the most part, this week being the exception, I think, to that. So yeah, I would definitely give it an 8, though. Absolutely. You know, because it was just so much fun, and it was done in a respectful and entertaining way. And thanks, Aaron, for avoiding diarrhea and other grotesque things that your peers were unable to stay away from. So that's it. 8 for me. 8.000.
They got every Star Trek series in except Strange New Worlds. I didn't see a Strange New Worlds reference in there.
Or Voyager.
Well, Neelix is from Voyager.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yep, they got them all in there, but Strange New Worlds.
Actually, Hemmer was in there.
Was Hemmer in there?
Hemmer was in there. There was that, like, two-thirds of the way through, there's a couple of quick panels where Saru and Hemmer both go by. They don't really, nothing really happens, but he's on screen for, like, 3.5 seconds.
Well, okay, then I stand corrected. All right, Charles, what does that put us with our fans?
Well, the fans, I'd say, looked at a little better than we did. 8.3. We give it a 7.9.
All right. There you have it, guys. All right. Well, this is the part of the show where we do our Star Trek birthdays. Oh, my God. There's an Arab on the corner buying everything he buys. There's a mother in
Error.
Okay.
Error.
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 The
facts are uncoordinated.
That was not a Klingon song.
You know, Weird Al just loves to jump in there. You got to watch that guy every minute. I'm telling you, he's just brutal. Anyways, this is a part of the show where we do our Star Trek birthdays, and we always start off by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we're going to remember 9 members of our Star Trek community who have gone before us. The first is actor Arthur Bernard. Arthur Bernard was the stage name of Arthur Friedman, who played Apella in the TOS second season episode, A Private Little War. In 1948, Bernard began his 42-year tenure as a professor at the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television, which lasted, of course, until 1990, which I thought was an interesting fact about him. He taught courses in acting and directing for film and television. He's probably more famous than that for that than he was for his actual acting. But he did do some writing and producing and directing for radio, television, and the stage along the way. His very last performance that we saw him actually on screen was in 2001. In fact, he died almost immediately after this show. It was really sad. He had just completed filming an appearance as an elderly jogger in the 2001 comedy The Animal, which was his only feature film credit. So Arthur Bernard, born September 29th, 1919, would have had a birthday this week. Happy birthday, Arthur. Happy birthday as well to actor Abram Sofer. Abraham Sofer was a veteran character actor who played the Thasian in the TOS first season episode Charlie X and voiced the Melcott in the third season episode Spectre of the Gun. Abraham is one of our 19th century births from the TOS years. He was born in 1896, and he was born to Burmese Jewish parents, which kind of gave him sort of a darker skin tone, which then later in his career would actually get him cast as a lot of Native Americans and other brown-skinned people along the way. He had a particular propensity for playing in science fiction stuff, because he was in The Outer Limits, Time Tunnel, Lost in Space, Twilight Zone, shows like that. He also, along the way, was a one-time school teacher and switched gears to acting after a short time, made his stage debut, of course, in Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice, known as Abe to his good friends. He was the father of six children along the way, which I think is so cool. So Abraham Sofer managed to balance an amazing acting career with an amazing family life, lived to be the ripe old age of 91 years old. Happy birthday, Abraham. Happy birthday as well to actor Charles Drake. Charles Drake was born Charles Rupert, and he was the actor who played Commodore Stocker in the TOS second season episode, The Deadly Years. Drake appeared in nearly 80 featured films. He began primarily as a background extra and bit player, making brief appearances in classics like The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Sergeant York, and The Maltese Falcon, of course, from 1941. He soon began taking larger supporting roles in films like the 1953 science fiction classic It Came from Outer Space and 1957's Until They Sail. But his most well-known film role is by far Dr. Sanderson in the 1950 comedy Harvey, one of my favorites. I just showed it to my family the other day. My teenager loved it, actually. It was kind of funny. Charles Drake would have had a birthday just October 2nd this week. Happy birthday, Charles. As well to the beautiful and amazing Persis Khambada. She, of course, was the Indian model and actress who played Ilea and the Ilea probe, I guess, if you want to sort of separate that as a different character in Star Trek The Motion Picture, the bald one who you're thinking of right now. She was, of course, born in Mumbai, India, and started her career at a very young age, 13 years old, when she was hired for advertisements for a soap brand. Then just a few years later, when she was 17 years old, she would be named Miss India and participate in that year's Miss Universe pageant. She sort of tried to break into the film stuff outside of the Bollywood scene, because I guess she didn't really dig on the Bollywood scene too much, but she had to actually go international to do that. When she did go international, she got a few major roles in sort of, you know, B-movies along the way, Nighthawks, Megaforce, and Warrior of the Lost World. Never really found deep success, and then eventually returned to India to establish herself as a Bollywood actress. So
Nighthawks is a bomb. Nighthawks is such a great movie.
Is it a good movie? I haven't seen that movie in such a long time. 1981 is when that came out, and I just haven't seen it in such a long
time.
One of
the cool Rutger Hauer movies ever. It's just great. Yeah,
I'm gonna
she's great in it, too.
That's amazing. All right, well, thanks for mentioning that. So Persis Khambada would have had a birthday also October 2nd. She was born in 1948, and we just lost her when she was 49 years old in 1998.
Damn.
Very sad just to be lost so early. So happy birthday, Persis. Happy birthday as well to Madeline Rue, the amazing Madeline Rue, born Madeline Solomon. She was a prolific character actress who portrayed Lieutenant Marla McGivers in the TOS first season episode Space Seed. Marla McGivers, of course, eventually falling in love with Khan and that whole situation there. Madeline Rue not only played that, she made over 100 appearances on television along the way, including appearances on shows like Have Gun Will Travel, The Untouchables, Gunsmoke, Hawaii Five-O, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Mission Impossible, and Starsky and Hutch. She was some kind of like cool Ricardo Montalban stuff about her. In 1960, prior to Star Trek, she was actually in a Bonanza episode with Ricardo Montalban. And then years later, after Star Trek, she was actually in an episode of Fantasy Island with him as well. So just kind of a cool like little trifecta of connections there between Madeline Rue and Ricardo Montalban. Eventually, Madeline was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and she actually continued to act after that, which I thought was super cool, making her final on-screen appearance in 1996, and we lost her in 2003. So happy birthday, October 3rd, 1935, to Madeline Rue. Happy birthday as well to actor John Hoyt. He was a veteran actor of film, television, and theater who portrayed our very first doctor we ever get to see, Phil Boyce, in TOS's first pilot, The Cage, or as I like to call him, the doctor with the martini case that he travels with, pulls it out when the captain needs it. I think that's pretty cool. Hoyt was born John MacArthur Hoistrat in New York, and is actually or was a graduate of Yale University and was a teacher of history and stand-up comedian before joining Orson Welles' Mercury Theater in 1937, where he performed with that company until World War II. And after he served in the military, he returned to acting and began portraying a lot of characters that I think you would describe as heavies, you know, menacing characters, people maybe who were standing in the background looking like they were going to beat you up when you didn't agree with what their boss was saying. By the time of his retirement in 1987, he had built up nearly 250 screen credits. So just one of these guys who started out in Broadway and then really just had an amazing, prolific career. And I love Phil Boyce, honestly. Like he's the proto Bones. He's the doctor that like understands his captain and gives his captain what he needs. And I would have loved to have seen a Phil Boyce character continue. And honestly, if Phil Boyce shows up on Strange New Worlds, I would not be unhappy. So actor John Hoyt would have had a birthday just today, October 5th, 1905. Happy birthday, John Hoyt. Happy birthday as well to George Vincent Hohmeyer, also known as Skip to his friends and most of the industry, honestly. He was the actor who played Melikon in the TOS second season episode Patterns of Force, and also played Dr. Severin in the third season episode The Way to Eden.
Herbert.
Say computer and Herbert. Yeah, there we go. Outside of Star Trek, Hohmeyer co-starred in such films as The Gunfighter, one of his many, many westerns with Ethan Peck's grandfather, right? Gregory Peck. The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, he was in that. He was in Helter Skelter, a couple other movies along the way. But most of his credits were made up of westerns and war films along the way. He phased out his career and he retired completely following a featured role in the western film Quell and Company in 1982, and little was heard from him until his death after that, until in 2017. So lived to be 86 years old, but was pretty quiet in his later years. Happy birthday this week, just today, October 5th, to Skip Hohmeyer. Happy birthday as well to Ed Long, who played Medro in the TOS third season episode, The Cloud Minders. Just a handful of credits to Ed's name. He appeared in other shows such as The Fugitive, Mannix. He was on the original Batman series for an episode. He was in Bonanza, Gunsmoke, and the TV movie Slither, Ed Long. And last but certainly not least, we have the birthday of Harriet C. Leiter. Harriet C. Leiter was the actress who portrayed Amari in the TNG fifth season episode, Unification 2. If you don't remember who she is, it's okay. She's the four-handed salt-sucking pianist in the bar on Quaalar 2. Now you know who I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Leiter also appeared on the television series The Commish. She was on Married with Children, My So-Called Life, and Time of Your Life. Among her film credits are supporting roles in the comedy Torch Song Trilogy, the drama For Parents Only, and a thriller called Dream Lover. We lost Harriet way too young as well. She was born in 1944, died in 2004 at the age of 59 years old. So Harriet C. Leiter, happy birthday today, October 5th. And that, you guys, does it for our remembrances this week. So I'm going to take this birthday candle, which is burning not low yet, but we better get a move on here, Charles.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Well, I'm not going to add a whole lot to the candle. Let's say happy birthday to Shay Astor, the actress and singer who played Isabella in Star Trek Next Generation, fifth season episode, Imaginary Friend. Happy birthday to William A. Wallace, actor who played the role of Wesley Crusher at the age 25 in the Star Trek Next Generation first season episode Hyde and Q.
That, by the way, Charles, that's one of the best trivia questions that you can have in your arsenal from TNG years. If somebody is like, you know, oh, I'm an expert on TNG, I've seen them all, ask them who the other actor was that played Wesley Crusher, and they'll look at you like they have no idea what you're talking about.
And the reason a lot of the mic people I'm doing, not really doing backgrounds, they didn't have all the backgrounds. A lot of them did maybe 20 or 30 shows, and that was it. Happy birthday to S.T. Chandler, who played Oleana Marine in Star Trek Next Generation first season episode Coming of Age. Happy birthday to Hannah Chessman, Canadian actress who played the role of Arium in the second and third season of Star Trek Discovery. As Jim posted, he said, oh, she was in the second season. But she appeared in the third season because she played the mirror Arium.
Mirarium? There you go.
Yeah. Last one's another one who surprisingly didn't have a lot of roles, but is well known. A very happy birthday to accomplished stage, television, and film actor. Best known for his role as Benjamin Sisko in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So we're saying a very happy birthday to Avery Brooks. Who I thought it interesting when I looked at his IMDb, and it's like, oh, we attend Star Trek festivals, like the one in New Zealand. It's like, well, that might be the only one, because we have not seen him on stage for many years. I don't think I've seen him at all on stage. I think he's a professor at the college that he works with, and I think that's where he spent a lot of time. He did have a couple of big roles in, I think it was the 70s or 80s, but we know him well for Sisko. Anybody want to comment on Avery Brooks?
Oh, man, talk about a different kind of cap. I remember when Deep Space Nine came out and that first episode happens, and not only do you get the like chip on his shoulder with Picard situation, but then you get the like magic of him and Jake and the relationship that they're going to form over the course of the series. It's no secret on the podcast that DS9 is my favorite Star Trek, and I think Avery Brooks is a huge, huge part of that. He is a distinguished alumni of Rutgers, and he does still teach, I believe, theater at the Mason Gross School of the Arts. But yeah, wouldn't it be cool to like see him on stage or to like hear him talk
so powerful,
about some stuff,
man.
Or like, yeah,
he's
I just,
so powerful. What I like about that character the most is just, it's the first time that we really have seen in a, you know, not just a throw off way, but a captain who is a father. And that is almost, it's almost a more important role for him to fulfill than captain, right? To do a good job of being a father to somebody in a realistic way that parents could relate to. I just thought that was just incredibly cool. And did you guys ever watch Spencer for Hire?
Yeah.
It's like, because before he was cast, Avery Brooks was Hawk on that show, right? And he was such a badass. I mean, he was just brutal. It's just like, if you needed something done or needed somebody threatened or intimidated or need someone to come across, you just sent Hawk over, right? And when I remember when everyone heard that's who they cast as the Starship Captain, it was such a cool choice, right? I'm like, he's going to just rip the place up because he's got one of those generous, you know, Shakespearean voices that just, like, you know, get out of his way, man. Just get out of his way. He is just brilliant. So, yeah, I just don't think he gets the credit he deserves. He's a towering presence in Star Trek.
Well,
with
said,
that, I will pass the candle over to Paul.
Okay. Deep breath. Okay. Well, we got all kinds of birthdays going on, so we better get to it, right? First of all, a happy birthday goes out to German-born British actress Antoinette Bauer. And we were talking about Halloween earlier, right? Well, Antoinette Bauer played Sylvia in the original series second season episode Cat's Paw, right? The infamous Halloween episode. Very, very cool. Of course, when you find out what Sylvia really is, it's pretty disturbing. It's like I liked you better in your slinky dress, but not so much now. Right? Happy birthday also goes out to the fabulous Stephen Collins, who a lot of people know from the ongoing TV series of, you know, I want to say something ridiculous like 10, 11 seasons, Seventh Heaven. And, of course, we're talking about Stephen Collins, right, who we all know for playing the role of Will Decker, snubbed for Command because of the pickish move of ego on the half of Captain Kirk. And, you know, but he gets to hang out with Elia for a while, so it's okay. I'm sure he can, you know, find a way of getting around that. And it was one of those things that people, you know, debated a bit. But in the novelization of Star Trek, the motion picture, it's pretty clearly established that Will Decker was meant to be the son of Commodore Matt Decker, of course, yeah, who, you know, perished in Doomsday Machine. So I thought that was really, really cool. And because I love that tie-in there. I wish they had been able to explore that, you know, of a son who's lost his father in such a crazy way. You know, that would have been a really cool ongoing character. But sadly, he didn't get to continue beyond that one role. But I think fans like him, and I think he was very cool. This next one is we talk about admirals a lot of the show. And to me, this is a good one because it's a very realistic admiral. We are loving actress Natalia Nogulic, because she played the recurring character of Admiral Alyana Nechev in both series, Next Gen and Star Trek Deep Space Nine, so a whole bunch of episodes. But I love the fact that Nechev is one of those ones you can tell Picard's a little intimidated by her, right? Because he knows that she's a hard ass. And that she's going to insist on, like, following orders and doing what the greater good is. When you appeal to her with reason and a good reason, she'll change her mind, right? But she toes the line. And so I think, would you agree, Eric, a good admiral?
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. One of our very best admirals that we have in all of Star Trek, for sure.
But realistic, just because she's, you know, she's – I like the fact that, you know, she did not even remotely let gender get in the way of her interpretation of the performance.
She's, well, yeah, and like, she's, and like you said, Paul, she's all business. Like, there's this one line, what is it? I think it's from like Descent or something, where she's like, listen, your duty is to the Federation, not to wrestle with your conscience. Like, just freaking follow orders and do what you're told to do. And that is what an admiral needs to be every once in a while when Picard's like, I don't know, what should I do?
Yeah, because there's, you know, situations of war and the greater good, and it's just like, you know, what protects all of our interests, not your immediate ones, right?
Yep.
So she's that kind of hardcore conscience that you have. You know, you might not like her in the moment, but, you know, at the end of the day, you probably will really respect her. And I think that's an incredible role model for people. So moving on, we have all kinds still going on. Hello and happy birthday to Michelle Krusiak, a Taiwanese-American actress who played 18-year-old Molly O'Brien in the Deep Space Nine, I want to say sixth-season episode, Time's Orphan. Very, very cool. Love to see these characters get interpreted in different ages in different ways. Bridget Ann White from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who we are liking, who played Laurel in Deep Space Nine's 6th season episode, Who Mourns for Morn? We are also saying happy birthday up north to Canadian actor, writer, and artist Duncan Rager, who played Ronan in the Next Generation 7th season episode, oh yeah, Sub Rosa, light that candle, baby.
One of our very favorite episodes to discuss.
Maybe I have recently seen. Yeah, I have recently seen, though. Guess who else it's turned into one of their favorite episodes? Gates McFadden will sign your crazy Sub Rosa candle if you present one to her at a con, right? And she will sign it smoking. And she is not shy of expressing her affection for that. So I think it's, was something she came to learn to like. But you gotta love that character. I mean, Ronan's great. He's totally from the gothic romance universe, but he just played it in such a cool way. Then he went on to play Shakar Adon on Deep Space Nine in 3 different episodes, Shakar, Crossfire, and The Begotten. Duncan Rager, cool Canadian actor, writer, and artist who is an indelible part of Star Trek. And I think I've got nothing but love for Sub Rosa. Sorry. And then finally for me, happy birthday goes out to Jane Edwina Seymour, played the Borg Queen in Star Trek Picard 3rd season episodes Vox and The Last Generation. And we say played the Borg Queen, we're really talking about the physicality interpretation, because the character was voiced by the great Alice Krieger, of course, who owns Borg Queendom for all time. But a wonderful ability to really create a performance together that the two of them did. So well done, Jane Edwina Seymour, and wonderful gift to fans of Star Trek with that last season of Picard. I just got that on Blu-ray this week, and I can't wait to dig into it. I'm super excited to revisit those episodes because some of them were just stellar. Right, Uncle Jim?
Absolutely. And resistance is futile. I've got 4 more birthdays to go, got some pretty good ones, and then we're going to dive into Star Trek news, and we've got some really fun stories I want to get to. First of all, we want to say happy birthday to Elizabeth Dennehy, who played Elizabeth Shelby in Star Trek The Next Generation 3rd and 4th season episodes The Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and Part 2, and she reprised the role on Star Trek Picard's 3rd season episode Vox, which Paul was just talking about. Happy birthday, Elizabeth Dennehy. We also want to say happy birthday to Adil Hassoun, who was the Indian actor who played Adia Sahil in Star Trek Discovery's 3rd season episode That Hope Is You, Part 1, People of the Earth, and That Hope Is You, Part 2. We also derail the actor from Brooklyn, New York, who played Hazar, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, 2nd season episode, Sanctuary, and I always save the Klingons for last. So we want to say Kapla, well, or maybe Jolan True, or a combination of Jola Kapla, to Jennifer Gotti, who played the role of Bial, Star Trek The Next Generation, 6th season episode, Birthright Part 1 and Birthright Part 2, and she also appeared as Libby in the Star Trek Voyager 2nd season episode Non Sequitur, and this is the character that was half Romulan, half Klingon. Worf fell in love with her, had a fling, but just couldn't deal with the cultural differences and left her behind.
It's because Worf is a racist, and we all know that's true.
Every time I'm with you, I see your mother.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
she cannot
he can't even help it. It's like part of his culture or something. It's just like, I love the guy, but man, he is a straight up racist, and he has a hard time dealing with it a lot.
Yeah, I think, you know, he grew a lot, but boy, did they really program those kids? I'll tell you what. Right?
Yeah.
Did you say Jolan Kapla? Did I
Jolan Kapla? Yeah.
Yeah,
I
think that's
that.
A keeper. I like that, man. Let's put a post-it note on that, Jim. Let's hang on to that.
Quick, get the domain name.
Right. Hurry.
She
could be a profitable chain
though.
Of burger emporium.
Jolan Kapla burgers. Fresh gawk on every burger.
Great character, though. And Worf was a dink in that episode, I want to add.
Yeah, he blew it.
She was a great
character. He could have been very happy.
Yep.
She didn't deserve. And the thing that made her such a great character, she didn't understand what Worf's problem was with her.
just didn't see it. She couldn't see it. And Worf just slapped. Guys, well, it's time for Star Trek news.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Okay, Charles, you get to start us off this week.
Okay, well, I guess I need to go look at my Kindle. Star Trek Halloween is number one. Is the franchise's darkest horror story yet? Star Trek Halloween number one is written by Chris. Yeah.
Sicaria,
and drawn by Joe Isma. Set during Star Trek Next Generation's seventh season, the crew of Enterprise begins experiencing odd phenomena after passing through a galactic storm. And when the crew members start going missing, Picard and company realize something is amiss. Fear, distrust, and paranoia begin running through the rampant of the ship as order breaks down. Picard must struggle not only to maintain control of the Enterprise, but take the ship back from the dark forces that have laid siege to it. The crew of the Enterprise have known fear before, but never like this. Star Trek's attempt at telling horror stories in the past were always grounded in real world, where everything could be explained away with scientific jargon. And Halloween continues this, but ramps up the darkness and dread. Far from a one-off romp, Halloween's main villain will be familiar to longtime Star Trek fans. And here they are, their most terrifying. Star Trek Halloween 1, it not only plays around with tropes and characters from horror films such as Frankenstein's monster, but also from Star Trek's generally, namely the now iconic holodeck malfunctions. Numerous Trek episodes have evolved around holodeck malfunctions, but Halloween makes up for the revisiting this idea by pulling no punches in the dark possibilities it creates. While not for the faint of heart, Star Trek Halloween 1 is still enormously satisfying to read and the franchise's darkest take on a horror yet. Star Trek Halloween episode is on sale October 4th from ID Publishing, which means it released on shelves yesterday.
Charles, I love that number one is out. I personally am waiting for that variant cover of number two, which is a beautiful, beautiful J.K. Woodward painting of Riker turning into some kind of werewolf. It looks awesome.
And nice to see J.K. back, because I don't think we've seen a lot of his work recently at IDW, at least with Star Trek.
It's true, and there was a special thing that he actually posted on his his Instagram page or something, where he said that he actually took the original of that painting and took it to a con and got it signed by Jonathan Frakes. And he's like, guess who's never selling this original? It's one of his coolest paintings, man. I love it.
Well, guys, I got the next story, and not the brain. Space Rhapsody episode of Strange New World. Why Star Trek's first musical picked K-pop over Klingon opera is explained by the songwriters. Star Trek Strange New World's musical episode, Subspace Rhapsody, the Klingons break out into a K-pop-style choreographed musical number and not Klingon opera. Kay Hanley and Tom Pulse, who wrote the songs for Star Trek's first ever musical, say they did have options for the Klingons' performance. Pulse revealed that one concept for the Klingons scene was opera, calling it a no-brainer, before crediting Hanley with the out-of-the-box K-pop idea, and confirms that both versions were filmed for the episode. K-pop, a musical style for the Klingons,
was unexpected, and that's exactly what made it the right choice. Star Trek has a long history of Klingons singing opera existing within the universe, but K-pop puts the Klingons, led by Hemmer, actor Bruce Horak, same level as the rest of the USS Enterprise crew, most of whom are embarrassed by the inner emotions that the field forces them to reveal. For the audience who wants to see the more traditional take on singing Klingons, the Klingon opera version of the scene will be included in the extras on Star Trek Strange New World Season 2 Blu-ray, scheduled to be released on December 5th, 2023. I just want to say real quick, I'm glad they didn't go with Klingon opera because it would have been too in character for the Klingons, and I feel that scene was perfect and put it over the edge for me as a Klingon fan. All right, Eric, you got the next one.
All righty. We've got a cool article here that with a little twist on a traditional saying, so to speak, give long and prosper, a special tribute to Leonard Nimoy. Make the logical choice. Help bring the spirit of Star Trek to the museum. You may be asking which museum. This article is all about the Boston Museum of Science. We all know that Spock, the actor behind the character Leonard Nimoy, believed strongly in the importance of science, the significance of generosity, and the course of the power of logic. Before his death, Leonard Nimoy was significantly involved with the Boston Museum of Science, growing up in the area and narrating the original Mugar Omni Theater pre-show, which I have personally seen. Now, as a tribute to him, in partnership with the Nimoy family and local sculptor David Phillips, we are raising funds to create a new Leonard Nimoy-inspired memorial sculpture at Science Park. So this is at the Museum of Science there in Boston, which is, of course, at One Science Park. It's a really cool sculpture. It's like a... it's a Vulcan hand, you know, the live long and prosper symbol. If you're interested in getting involved in either tracking what's going on or in donating to this effort, you can contact donor support at the email address friends@mos.org. I think it's a really cool thing, and I love that Boston is finally kind of like embracing the fact that Leonard Nimoy was from around the way, and he deserves to be honored in some ways. So pretty cool. So, Paul, I know you got some cool Prodigy news, right?
I'm going to talk about something that I know is both in my house and is also in Eric's house in terms of a physical product. And we're talking about Star Trek Prodigy, Season 1, Volume 2. While efforts to find Star Trek Prodigy a new streaming home continue, looking at you, Aaron Waltke, wink, 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 3 months after the series was unceremoniously removed by the hipster 20-something nudniks at Paramount Plus, remained idle under Sadat, and they need another mojito. The remainder of the animated series' first season is finally warping home on Blu-ray and DVD. Though the second 10 episodes of Season 1 live on through digital purchase options through iTunes and Prime Video, actually holding a physical copy of the otherwise unavailable episodes is a welcome relief. While the behind-the-scenes efforts to bring Season 2 to the public trudge along silently, covertly, while Aaron Waltke drops little eyedropper fulls of mind-controlling liquid into the cocktails of studio executives and whispers silent instructions into them. Yes, master, we shall greenlight 6 more seasons. Star Trek Prodigy Season 1, Episodes 11 to 20 is a 2-disc Blu-ray collection, which contains a few behind-the-scenes bonus features, along with the episodes Asylum, Let Sleeping Borg Lie, All the World's a Stage, Crossroads, Masquerade, Preludes, Ghost in the Machine, Wine Walk, and the two-part Supernova season finale. As for the trio of bonus features below, here's what's included. I shall read an abridged version of these, given the small amount of time we have left. The Odyssey of Prodigy, Producing Prodigy, Producing Prodigy the Ships. And when we'll get to see the story of Dal Gwyn, Rock Talk, Zero, Jacob Fogg, Murph, and Admiral Janeway continue, I don't know, but until then, we'll be revisiting this series on disc to keep the Protostar saga alive. Isn't that right, Donut David?
That was freaky, dude.
Okay. Very yummy donuts they were. So
you got him rattled.
So my new little new piece here is Star Trek Lower Decks. Jack Quaid talks how he brought Boimler to life in Strange New World, and I'm in awe of how well he did. Star Trek Strange New Worlds took a gamble in Season 2 when it decided to cross over with the animated comedy Lower Decks, but the episode was well-loved by fans of both shows. We're now hearing from Jack Quaid about how he brought Bradward Boimler to life. He quotes, I went back and looked at a lot of Lower Decks episodes to get the Boimler down. I snuck a few things in there. He does a lot of this gesturing with hands in the show, and I tried to get some of that in there. I did the Section 31 power walk. I got the Boimler scream in there. It was cool to see how he moved and then to try to bring that into my own body. It was such a weird and trippy experience, but so rewarding and so cool. Unquote. Or end quote, I mean. It speaks volumes to the fact that I didn't notice any of this, but it still felt like I was just watching Bradward Boimler in the living flesh on the Enterprise. I shouldn't be surprised, given that he's an absolute joy to watch on The Boys. I would have loved to see live-action version of Tindy and Rutherford episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks on Paramount Plus on Thursdays. There's a massive collection of Star Trek. There's a massive collection of Trek on the platform for any fan to enjoy. So check it out and spend a day traveling through space with some of sci-fi's greatest characters. And yeah, that's pretty much what Jack Quaid did. So, Charles, do we have enough time for the next segment?
I think we're going to throw enough time to throw this one in, because I'm hoping some of you were reading it. Star Trek's Lower Deck Security Chief shines in special Star Trek Day of Blood prequel. IDW is publishing Star Trek Day of Blood. Might have just wrapped up its acclaimed crossover event in Star Trek 12 this week. But a new prequel one-shot also dropped Wednesday, September 27th. The prequel exposed exactly what Shaq's early involvement with the clash against the power-hungry Emperor Kalis II and the Red Path Klingons before signing aboard the Cerritos in Star Trek Lower Decks. Here, we're offering a taste of the character's fearsome warrior past as it concerns a conflict portions and monumental consequences to turn the galactic tides of the interstellar fascism and the chaos-seeking death cult. You've seen Captain Benjamin Sisko and Worf with their crews, the USS Thetos and the USS Defiant, stop the fascist god-killing clone Kalis II from declaring war on the non-followers across the galaxy in a brutal battle with Konos. But you haven't seen it from the eyes of the man, the myth, the legend, junior grade Shaq. From the writers behind the best-selling Star Trek Lower Decks comic series, Ryan North, with esteemed artist Derek Charm, from Jughead Marvel's The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, comes a 30-page standalone tie-in to the Star Trek Day of Blood crossover event. Star Trek FCBD 2023 Day of Blood number 1, Star Trek 11 and 12 and Defiant 6 and 7 detail the Bajorans beast mode brawl and showcase all the behind the scenes Leon Zillis butt kicking in a full animated glory. If you're not reading that series, you should be, because I had to put a stop. I had to take a break and said, okay, no more issues yet. Like, I need another issue or two. The story is continuing, and I need more. So one difficulty with dealing with series that it will go every few weeks. And with this, they're jumping between books. And the book's like, okay, you read Star Trek, then you got to read Defiant. You got to go back to Star Trek. Then you got to go back over to Defiant because they're in order. And it is worth the series. I am thoroughly enjoying it, and I can't wait to see what has happened.
And with
that, I left myself in a cliffhanger.
Out of time, guys. Mm-hmm. Hard to believe, isn't it, that our time flies right by? But it does, and it did. But we'll be back, same bat time, same bat channel next week. But don't touch that dial just yet. I want to say thank you to my incredibly awesome Trekspert. So thank you to Charles for hanging out and Trek talking with us. We really appreciate it, Charles.
Oh, thank you. Always fun to talking Trek.
And thank you so much to our very own Eric for hanging out and Trek talking with us as well. Thank you, Eric.
You bet, guys. I had a blast. Thanks.
And thank you so much for David, even though he didn't share the donuts with all of us. We still appreciate it. Thank you, David.
You're welcome. It's fun.
And, of course, thank you to our very own Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us as well. Thank you, Paul.
Glory to your house, my friend.
Glory to the death to the Durot. And, of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. And remember, Star Trek fans are the best fans. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Joel and Kapla.
The long across.
Joel and Kapla.
Now.
Let's see what's out there.